Unit 6. From the French Revolution to the Present Day. The 18th century witnessed the emergence of the doctrine of free thought, which has played a pernicious role in the history of the Church until the present day. Free thought was the logical result of the denial of the authority of the Catholic Church in religious matters. Protestants had rejected authority and demanded personal interpretation of the scriptures. In the 18th century, large numbers of misguided individuals went even further. They rejected the scriptures entirely, and in the place of Christianity, advocated deism. The deists, or rationalists, believed in a personal God whose existence and attributes were to be established by reason only. Christian revelation was entirely rejected. Catholic doctrine, in contrast to deism, teaches us that reason can demonstrate the facts of revelation, and that therefore it is truly reasonable to accept these facts and all that God has told us about himself. In England, the rationalists found support in Freemasonry. In France, these irreligious ideas were expounded and popularized by such brilliant but unprincipled writers as the encyclopedists, Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Voltaire. This exaggeration of the importance of reason sowed the seeds of the French Revolution, a bloody social upheaval during which religion became separated from the state. The opening years of the 19th century were marked by the ambitions and achievements of Napoleon. Although this conqueror restored the Catholic faith in France, the Church suffered severely because of the secularization of its property. Freemasonry spread from England to France, and from France to the other countries of Europe. The most active and effective opponent of the rationalists and Freemasons was the Society of Jesus, or the Jesuits. Although this holy order had been suppressed in 1773, it was restored in 1814 by a later pontiff. The work of the Jesuits was aided by the efforts of gifted defenders of the faith in all the lands of Christendom. In England, the Oxford movement brought many brilliant men back to the Church. When the hierarchy was restored, such figures as Cardinal Newman, Cardinal Manning, and Cardinal Wiseman inspired countless thousands by their lives and writings. Powerful orators such as Lacordaire helped to strengthen the Church in France. Germany's von Kettler was a pioneer in Catholic social reform. In Italy, Don Bosco introduced notable reforms in education for boys. The 20th century has been a period of storm and stress for the Church. Rapid, far-reaching economic and social changes have released disruptive forces and have introduced a host of new problems. However, 20th century Catholics have been inspired by such canonized saints as the Curé of Ars, Bernadette of Lourdes, and Thérèse of Lisieux, models of virtue and heavenly intercessors. Great popes such as Leo XIII and Pius XI have been effective economic reformers. In recent years, there have been many noble martyrs in Spain, Russia, Germany, Poland, and Mexico. Today, the Church is facing a life-and-death struggle with such organized forces of evil as communism, Nazism, and fascism. Chapter 12. The French Revolution. The strongest and most unbalanced, in fact, the most naive exaggeration of reason and knowledge, is the characteristic feature of this philosophy which culminates in the, quote, religion of reason in the French Revolution. J. Lortz and E. J. Kaiser. The background of the revolution. Nature of the French Revolution. The French Revolution of 1789 was a terrible political and social upheaval which has exerted a far-reaching influence on all subsequent history up to our own day. Although the revolution was called forth in part by serious abuses, it soon assumed a radical character which led to the most appalling horrors and excesses. It was not until 1815, when Napoleon was finally overthrown, that the revolutionary era came to an end. The French Revolution was the first instance in Europe of large-scale resistance to absolutism. Since absolutism itself was in large part the offspring of Protestantism, it can be seen that this cataclysm need never have occurred had it not been for the split in the universal church. Protestantism also tended to bring on the revolution by its denial of religious authority and its emphasis on private interpretation of the scriptures. This soon led to the undermining of all authority, civil as well as spiritual, and to the false doctrine of rationalism, which tells us that reason is supreme and solely sufficient. All these forces appeared with particular virulence in France. Thus the church and the king were spurned, and the rabid revolutionary mobs expressed their fury in bloodshed and destruction. Even after the close of the revolutionary era, the influences of rationalism and radicalism remained in France. For a century and a half, religion and authority were sneered at by a large section of the population. As a direct result of these unholy ideas, France underwent a process of internal decay that made her easy prey to Hitler's Nazi hosts in 1939. Causes of the Revolution. We have mentioned already the basic underlying cause of the French Revolution. However, there are a number of specific factors which help us to understand why the revolution took place, when and where it did, and why it assumed its peculiar character. 1. The influence of thinkers and writers. In the 18th century, France produced a number of brilliant but unprincipled writers who exercised a profound influence on the thought and social life of their times. These self-styled philosophers sneered at all things sacred and directed their bitterest attacks against the Catholic Church. Perhaps the most intellectual and most harmful of these writers was Voltaire, 1694 to 1778. Voltaire was a deist whose chief aim was to crush the Catholic Church, which he regarded as the greatest barrier to scientific progress. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, 1712 to 1778, one of the most popular and influential members of this radical group, attacked the Church's teaching on education and marriage in his novel Emile. His Social Contract made a powerful appeal for political reforms, which would give the people a voice in the government. Diderot, 1713 to 1784, was the leader of an influential group of writers known as the Encyclopedists. These were so called because they collaborated in the preparation of a voluminous encyclopedia. The Encyclopedists made a strong appeal to various elements in France and other countries. For example, to society ladies who had an exaggerated regard for the natural sciences and disdain for the spiritual and moral precepts of religion. Diderot is quoted as expressing the hope that the last king might be strangled with the entrails of the last priest. All these writers and many others whom we cannot mention contributed to the loss of faith and moral ruin of the masses of the people, and thus were a potent cause of the revolution. 2. Freemasons. Freemasons are a secret society of a religious nature, originally organized in London, England, where their first Grand Lodge was founded in 1717. Freemasonry was introduced into France in 1725 by Lord Derwentwater. The Freemasons were, and are, a numerous and powerful society whose chief aim is the destruction of established religions, particularly the Catholic religion. The French Revolution and every revolution in Europe in the 18th and 19th centuries bear witness to their destructive power. Catholics may not be Freemasons. The society has been condemned by various pontiffs, among them Clement XII in 1738, Benedict XIV in 1751, and Leo XIII in 1884. 3. Suppression of the Jesuits. Voltaire declared that the destruction of Christianity would be an easy task if the Society of Jesus could first be eliminated. In 1773, the governments of France, Spain, Portugal, and Naples urged Pope Clement XIV to suppress the Jesuits. The Pope finally assented, but fear rather than conviction motivated his act. He was afraid that schisms would result if he refused. Portugal had expelled the Jesuits in 1759, France in 1764, Spain in 1767, and Naples and Parma, Spanish dependencies in Italy, in 1768. Austria soon took similar action, but the infidels of Europe would be satisfied with nothing less than complete suppression. In Russia, the order of suppression was not executed. The Jesuits, with the assistance of Catherine II, were able to keep their corporate organization in that land. Frederick II of Prussia also aided them in Silesia. Elsewhere, however, 22,000 Jesuits submitted without a protest. The great majority of Catholic bishops, priests, and laymen bowed in grief at this unjust treatment. Their grief was fully justified. For, with the Jesuits out of the way, the destructive forces that were to bring on the revolution were relieved of one of their most powerful adversaries. Incidentally, it should be pointed out that all the charges brought against the Jesuits at the time of their suppression have been disproved by historians. 4. Extravagance and financial exhaustion. From the middle of the 17th century until the revolution, France pursued an aggressive foreign policy that required huge expenditures for military purposes. This policy was initiated by Louis XIV, 1643 to 1715, who fought a series of wars with the sole aim of extending the boundaries of his realms. Louis was also fantastically extravagant in his personal and social life. The Sun King, as he was known, built a great palace at Versailles, where he lived in extreme luxury, attended by no fewer than 15,000 nobles, including members of the higher clergy. The material splendor and fastidious etiquette that prevailed here were only a cloak for shameful vices. The king and his courtiers were parasites, living in luxury and idleness at the expense of the masses of the people. As a result of Louis's military adventures and personal extravagance, the state was forced to assume huge debts. The next king, Louis XV, 1715-1774, was even worse than his predecessor. His reign was characterized by extreme wastefulness and corruption. There is a tradition that upon one occasion, this king remarked, "After me, the deluge." This means that he foresaw the terrible revolutionary upheaval which was to break out in his unhappy land. Louis XVI, 1774-1792, was a good man, but dull and weak. He was not personally extravagant, but he did nothing to reduce expenditures at court, and new debts had to be incurred to meet even ordinary expenses of government. As a result of these decades of conscienceless waste, the closing years of the 18th century found France on the very verge of national bankruptcy and complete economic chaos. 5. Unfair taxation of the Third Estate. Under the old regime, as the rule of the pre-revolutionary kings came to be known, society was divided into three classes or estates. The clergy constituted the first estate, the nobility the second estate, and all others, laborers, merchants, peasants, serfs, professional people, etc., the third estate. The bulk of the crushing taxation which the extravagances of the kings necessitated fell on the third estate. Among the taxes were a land tax, a salt tax, a poll tax, and an income tax. Moreover, the peasants were liable to forced labor on the roads for a few days each year with no pay. Besides this, the church collected its tithe, and the nobles demanded feudal dues. It is estimated that in some districts, the common people paid away 80% of their incomes in taxes. The privileged classes, however, were able to avoid most of these taxes. The system of taxation was oppressive in its nature, unjust in its distribution, and arbitrary in its collection. It is important to understand that only the higher clergy enjoyed the privileges of the first estate. These higher clergy usually came from noble families. The lower clergy, on the other hand, were drawn largely from the common people and often sympathized with them against their oppressors. They worked indefatigably to help the poorer classes and were so miserably paid by the government that their economic status was usually no better than that of a peasant or laborer. At the time of the revolution, there were in France 131 archbishops and bishops, 60,000 secular priests, 23,000 monks, and 37,000 nuns. 6. Other injustices. Under the absolutism of the old regime, there was no freedom of speech and press. The king could arbitrarily suppress any criticism of his rule. By means of sealed orders, he could order the imprisonment of any person for an indefinite period without even preferring any charges against him or bringing him to trial. 7. The American Revolution. The successful revolution in America and the establishment of a democratic government was an inspiration to the people of France. It gave them hope that they too might be able to throw off the yoke of oppression. The French were particularly interested in the success of the American Revolution because their government had aided it with men and money. Lafayette, de Grasse, and Rochambeau are some of the gallant Frenchmen who helped Washington achieve a final victory. The Rising Tide of Revolution. The calling of the Estates General and the formation of the National Assembly. By 1789, the financial situation in France was desperate. The need for new revenues was so great that the king finally agreed to call the Estates General, which had not met for nearly two centuries. The assembly which convened in Paris comprised 1,214 representatives, made up of 285 nobles, 308 clergy, and 621 commons. The Third Estate was determined to secure financial reforms and the elimination of the other abuses of the old regime. However, they immediately ran into a serious obstacle when an attempt was made to arrange matters so that the voting would be by estates rather than by individuals. In other words, each estate would have one vote, and the two higher estates would thus be able to outvote the representatives of the masses of the people. When the nobles and higher clergy refused to meet with them, the members of the Third Estate declared themselves a national assembly. When the king's soldiers barred them from their usual place of assembly, they met at a tennis court at Versailles, and here took the famous tennis court oath not to disband until France had a constitution. This persistence soon had its reward. Within a week, the members of the Third Estate were joined by almost all the clergy and by many of the nobles. The king had no choice but to recognize the National Assembly. Rumors were spread, however, that the king and his advisors were plotting to destroy the assembly. The people were greatly excited by these reports, and on July 14, 1789, a mob attacked and razed the Bastille, a royal prison in Paris. This event was regarded as a symbol of the destruction of the old regime and had repercussions throughout the country. Peasants were emboldened to attack the castles of their lords. Soon the National Assembly passed a series of decrees which abolished feudal dues, serfdom, exemption from taxes, the corvée, and many other special privileges and abuses. The Assembly also drew up a document known as the Declaration of the Rights of Man, which stated the basic principles of democratic government and guaranteed certain civil liberties, such as freedom of speech and the press. This was expressed in the revolutionary slogan, Liberty, Equality, Fraternity. The administration of the government was reorganized, and steps were taken to relieve the financial crisis. The purpose behind many of these reforms was good, but most of them were rendered ineffective because of mob rule. Civil Constitution of the Clergy. In 1790, the infidels who controlled the National Assembly drew up a civil constitution for the Catholic Church in France. This infamous law nationalized all church property. Parish priests and bishops were to be elected by the people, and the bishops were not to seek any confirmation of their appointment from the Pope. Salaries of churchmen were to be paid by the government. The king, who, with all his faults, was a devout Christian, signed the law under compulsion, hoping in this way to protect his family. Early in 1791, the Assembly ordered all bishops and priests to take an oath to support this civil constitution. However, the great majority of the clergy valiantly followed the Pope, who had condemned the constitution, and refused to obey the command of the Assembly. Of 130 bishops, only four took the oath. Of 70,000 priests, less than 20,000 did so. The non-juring clergy, as those who refused to take the oath were called, exposed themselves to terrible reprisals at the hands of the civil authorities and the mob, but they remained undaunted. Thus, a schism was created in France. The Legislative Assembly. The National Assembly finally drew up a constitution which established France as a limited monarchy in 1791. The king remained, but his powers were to be shared by the Legislative Assembly, elected by all citizens who possessed certain property qualifications. One of the first acts of this Legislative Assembly was to exile the more than 50,000 non-juring priests. In September 1792, there was a massacre of nobles and priests at Paris. About 1,400 were beheaded, including three bishops and 250 priests. This horrible crime was repeated on a smaller scale in other cities. The massacre was planned and instigated by the most radical and godless of all the revolutionary factions, the so-called Jacobins. The leaders of the Jacobins were Danton and Marat. The Establishment of a Republic. Many of the French nobles escaped to other countries where they tried to enlist support for armed intervention in France in order to crush the revolution. These émigrés, as the exiled noblemen were called, joined the armies of Prussia and Austria, which invaded France. The invading armies were defeated by the French forces. The monarchy, however, became more unpopular than ever, for it was widely believed that the king and his wife, Marie Antoinette, had encouraged the foreign sovereigns to form a coalition and make war on the revolutionary government of France. As a result, the king was deposed in September 1792, and a republic was set up. The king was then tried for treason and was guillotined in January 1793. Later in the same year, Marie Antoinette was also executed. The heir to the throne, an 8-year-old boy, died 2 years later as a result of mistreatment. His sister Maria Theresa was delivered to the Austrians. The Reign of Terror. The government of France was now entrusted to a national convention, but the real power was in the hands of a small group of men who formed the so-called Committee of Public Safety. The committee was dominated by Jacobin extremists, particularly by an atheistic fanatic named Robespierre. Robespierre instituted a reign of terror which lasted for several years and is believed to have cost the lives of over 1 million Frenchmen who died under the guillotine. The people were led to tolerate these unspeakable outrages because during all these years, France was fighting a coalition of foreign nations, and those who were sent to the guillotine were denounced as would-be betrayers of the Republic. Robespierre's greatest hatred, however, was against the Church. Thousands of priests were executed, and thousands of others were exiled. Even constitutional priests, those who recognized the civil constitution of the clergy, were persecuted. In 1793, the National Convention abolished Christianity. The calendar was changed by establishing a 10-day week and by renaming the months of the year. The holy feast days of the Church were replaced by revolutionary festivals. The supreme sacrilege took place in 1793 when a vile woman treading on the crucifix was borne in a procession to the Cathedral of Notre Dame. There she was placed upon the main altar and worshipped as the Goddess of Reason. This detestable Festival of Reason was arranged by extreme Jacobin atheists such as Hébert and Chaumette. It must not be supposed that these desecrations met with no opposition from the people. Rebellions against Robespierre and the convention broke out in such cities as Lyon, Marseille, and Bordeaux. The devout Catholic peasants at La Vendée, a region in western France, rose up in defense of their religion. Large armies were sent from Paris to crush this movement, but the Vendéans, under such leaders as Stoufflet and Charette, fought with desperate courage. Although many thousands of them were killed, the government was finally forced to grant them freedom of worship. The end of the Reign of Terror. In the meantime, the Reign of Terror moved on to ever madder license. Not only royalists and clergymen, but even moderate republicans were sent to their deaths. In 1794, Danton, one of the radical leaders of the revolution, was guillotined because he opposed some of Robespierre's extreme policies. Famine added to the misery of the people, and a number of corrupt terrorist politicians took advantage of the situation to amass huge fortunes. Finally, the people could stand the horrors of the terror no longer. In July 1794, Robespierre himself was sent to the guillotine. His death marked the end of the Reign of Terror. The Directory. After Robespierre's death, the National Convention proceeded to draw up still another constitution for France, which went into effect in 1795. This constitution set up a legislature composed of two houses, but executive authority was entrusted to a group of five men called the Directory. The Directory was faced by serious internal difficulties and foreign wars. Their inefficiency and corruption in the face of these problems paved the way for the rise of the military dictator Napoleon Bonaparte, whose career we shall consider in the next chapter. Pope Pius VI. During the years of the French Revolution, the throne of St. Peter was occupied by Pius VI, 1775 to 1799. Pius was a valiant and vigilant defender of the faith. When the revolution broke out, he realized immediately that it represented a great threat to Christianity. His worst fears were borne out by the anti-clerical measures of the revolutionary authorities and by their bloody persecution of the clergy. Pius thus became an uncompromising enemy of the revolution, and his moral influence was a powerful factor in the various coalitions formed to combat the godless French government. In 1796, a French army under Napoleon invaded Italy, and in the course of this campaign, fought against the papal troops. 2 years later, French troops actually invaded Rome and proclaimed the Papal States a republic. When Pius bravely refused to renounce his civil authority, he was taken prisoner and transported to Valence in southern France. Here he died in August 1799. This mistreatment of the Pope was one of the blackest acts committed by the corrupt Directory.